Yeah, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. You hit a big voice, man. The OG John Lopez. I'm Reginald Atatula. That's Figgy Fig hanging out with you here on a Wednesday. We're about to get into my rewatch of Week 8 versus the Indianapolis Colts. But we were talking about the Shamar Stewart thing with, you know, first round pick of the Bengals and who is now working out back in College Station as he's a Texas A&M Aggie. And it seems like we might possibly, there's a possibility that this heads towards a place where he sues for the opportunity to go back and play college football again this year, which that could create all sorts of interesting knock-on effects that I'd be very intrigued to see happen, although we will see if that comes about. But a question came in as we were talking about that on the text line from the 281. And again, the number to text is 713-572-4610 if you would like to get involved, which a lot of you have been doing today, and we really appreciate it because it's made it really fun and lively. But from the 281, they said, I'm more curious if and when the opposite happens. If college is now pro, can players skip college and go directly to from high school to like MLB, NBA?
Not in the NFL.
I don't. Yeah, I was like, I don't think that the NFL wants that.
No, nor should the kids want. It's a different world, brother.
Like, what would you say? Maybe
those men are paying mortgages. Yeah.
Maybe you get like one out of every three, four draft classes.
Players.
Yeah,
but one out of every thousand players.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. I took it from draft classes. Like one out of four draft classes. What a dude was like, oh no, he was ready to play at this level.
That's coming out of high school.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
No. Maybe even more. Hey, yeah. It's those first couple of years or year or two, whatever. In college, I mean, it's a world of difference, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a world. I mean, I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's a world of difference.
And I think also, I think that generally the NFL, this, the way that they are the ones that have you have to be 3 years removed from high school to get to the NFL. That's not necessarily a college rule that exists there. So they have benefited from a pseudo minor league that they don't have to pay for. So I think that they continue to want to benefit from that. They don't want to have to take in players.
They don't
want
to alienate it.
No.
You know?
And I think they wouldn't want to, because can you think about it? Imagine you get a guy, as you mentioned, very few of them are prepared immediately to compete at this level. If you're drafting a guy from high school, it's your responsibility to develop them. They don't have the apparatus to develop anybody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like they not practice squad. You only got a limited amount of those. You don't have it developmentally. Are you sending them to the UFL? Are you going to create that? Yeah. And you have to pay for it.
You think it's more realistic that maybe college freshmen might be able to clear for the draft rather than, you know, the high school going?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I think that 1 year makes a big difference.
Maybe. I think that they probably stay. I think the NFL would change.
I still think that's a little too much, but you do have a few players that are freshmen. You're like, man, he could go right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I'm sorry. I dipped into my own time. Now we turn to the 2024 rewatch of the Houston Texans season that I've been doing, gearing us up for the start of the 2025 season. Training camp just around the corner, baby. And, of course, a fair question that comes in from the 832. How EJ Speed look, Reggie, as, week 8. The Texans faced off against the Indianapolis Colts, and it starts off with a huge Damian Pierce return. And as this game gets going, it's like, oh, okay, they're getting Mixon involved early, but not just running the football, as he had a good rushing game in this one, throwing the football. And I realize I skipped what I typically do here, Lopez. Do you have any memories from this game?
Well, you just hit on the one, a big return, obviously, as I'm digging in to this game and remembering it, Joe Mixon, big time. Jonathan Taylor,
big time.
Big time.
Big time, which we will talk about. Or we could just talk about it now. It's very free form in the way that I do this. Linebacking continues to be a thing that you're looking at. You get Devin White in this game, remember? And, of course, Neville Hewitt. It just speaks to, man, you're going to need those linebackers to step up. But also, Jonathan Taylor, they had him out on the perimeter challenging.
Yeah.
If your guys on the perimeter were willing to tackle. He was creating a lot of missed tackles, and it was a long day. Again, it highlights one of the weaknesses, if you had one, for this Texans defense, which is you got to make sure you tackle. You got to make sure you have like a level of physicality going forward. Every team's going to have a weakness. This is the weakness for the defense. It is fair to have it. I want to see what they're capable of doing to try and remedy the weakness that is there.
And as you're talking, I'm sitting here kind of trying to go back to that game. And this was a bounce back game too for CJ Stroud.
Yes, 80-something yards in the previous game with Green Bay, and that's also one of the things I wanted to get to, and I appreciate you giving me the segue there, which is this is week three of last season without Nico Collins.
Oh, that's right.
And it show, baby, it show, right? It is evident. Now, this game is where you start seeming to see Bobby Slowick find some answers as to, okay, what do we do without Nico Collins? And before I even get deeper into that, I ask a question here. How long should it take for you to figure out what you do without – I mean, he's not just a receiver. He is
– The receiver.
The receiver on his team. But how long does it feel like you should be able to – or should it take for you to start figuring some of this out?
I'll tell you what. As a fan, 0 weeks. You know, you want to be able to make the adjustments. And nobody's expecting anyone to be Nico Collins. But it should have been the next week you figure something out with your receiving core and some sort of – you know, other options and other approaches, et cetera. But if you want to be generous, you know, give them a week to kind of get adjusted, but it should have happened by then.
Yeah, and so this is where you start figuring, you start getting this, and I'm like, all right, I feel like I was happy to see some of this. There was like a play where you had double slants and you get Robert Woods, who was just returning from missing 2 weeks himself, one of these outside slants. There was a lot of tight ends in this one early. Mm-hmm. So, like, he just, we're going to spread this out. We're going to get everybody involved, including Joe Mixon. Dalton Schultz had one of his better games, actually, of the season. It was 4 receptions, 52 yards on 6 targets, which, can we stop down on the Dalton Schultz-ster here? That was a very good game for him. He got involved over the middle. There's a couple of, like I said, a couple of passes that he wasn't able to connect on. If he does something near that on a relatively consistent basis, are you happy with him? Because, again, I was hearkening back to the conversation we had yesterday.
Yeah.
And, you know, you were talking about what's the best case scenario in a tight end.
Right.
And you want what does it take for you to have a good feeling on Dalton Schultz in the role and with the payment that you are giving him right now?
I think that also should be the expectation. You know, about 6 targets, 4 catches.
On the high end, or on the moderate end?
Yeah, I think that should be about what you expect from Dalton Schultz, given all the other targets, and then also given that you want another tight end involved. You want another tight end to be more integrally involved.
I think that was about.
In your offense.
One more time for me?
That's enough. Involved in your offense as well. So I don't have that high expectation. I also don't have low expectation for Dalton Schultz. I think he's going to be better in this offense, but not Pro Bowl. You know, just fit him in about that space right there.
Yeah, and of course, some of this happens because you have him with opportunities, right? And because Bobby Slowick had to be innovative more attentive, I guess, in ways that he got the ball to all these other guys that I imagine you're saying, hey, Reggie, I feel like you should have had that. He probably should have had that perspective going in when the five-headed monster conversation and all that. But it did bring me to the thought of how much does that shift with Nick Haley. Obviously, that's the question that we ask, is like, oh, a guy with tight end experience, how much does that shift just with a different offense that hopefully places him in an opportunity?
No, I think that's going to be one of the stories we follow.
Because he looked good in this. Like, yeah. I've got to be honest, he looked good in this game. We've seen in history, like, Dalton Schultz looked good. Dalton Schultz had, what, a 130-yard game in the first year that he was here in Houston. Like, we've seen Dalton Schultz be a useful player.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll be interested to see exactly what you get out of him. Somebody asked me on the text line, what did EJ Speed look like? EJ Speed looked like a form tackler, baby.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, he gonna fit in here fine. Not that I was at all worried about that. We knew that he was, you know, a huge tackler in Indy, but it was just good seeing it again. Just
that
really
was his
strong
beef
tackles.
Game, remember? He and CJ Stroud going out.
That's right. Him and Zaire Franklin as well involved in there as well. He showed up, man. He absolutely shows up on the film. I was going to say the film, but I watched a little bit of the film, but obviously I was watching the broadcast copy again, where last week Tony Romo was saying a lot of things that was like, I'm pretty sure that's wrong. Eric Murray had a fun game early, and that's not really pertinent to us at this point anymore. I will say, I already mentioned the Schultz. I mentioned Schultz. I mentioned the Taylor. This was the game where we finally saw the willingness to bench Kenyon Green. Because remember, Jarrett Patterson comes in.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for all of us, at the end of that drive or near the end of that drive, it is the end of the drive because that's the touchdown play.
Yeah.
Jarrett Patterson, while, you know, trying to get to the second level, falling into the linebacker and kind of still making a block in that way,
yeah,
gets a concussion and he's out. And
then put Kenyon Green back in, right?
Kenyon Green right back in. I did find it interesting, speaking of the broadcast, sideline reporter, and I apologize because I can't recall who it was on this broadcast, but the sideline reporter makes note that Gerard Johnson is in his face.
Yeah.
Making sure that, hey, you need to protect our quarterback before he goes back in there.
Yeah.
And it just reminds me of how mad I was that Kenyon Green kept being the guy that they went to.
Yeah. No, I'm interested in what other observations you might have here, but as you're talking, I'm thinking, I'm going back to the end of that game. This game also, I think one thing that you can kind of draw from it is it affected the way the Colts do business up until today, because that was the I'm tired game for Anthony Richardson, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
so it was.
That kind of changed the way they look at things as well that day.
Yeah, and we'll see if that changes it to a big amount. What it should have changed just on general, watching this game and realizing I'm watching it from the TV broadcast as opposed to we have the good fortune of being at NRG mm-hmm. for all the home games. I'm like, damn, he looks so bad in this to me, like to my eye after a long period of time.
Yeah.
At the half, Shane Steichen comes out with just a college offense. Like mm-hmm. you're talking about off, option. It looks like the reads are even more simplified coming out of half.
Yeah.
Like that dude, in theory, he's got the arm. There's one of these plays where, you know, Sting has a little bit more, gives a little bit more cushion than I'm comfortable with to, it wasn't Downs. I'm trying to remember who exactly it was. But there's a ball that's just feathered in there so nicely. I'm like, okay, that's the platonic ideal of what he gives you.
Yeah.
It's just so rarely that. He looks so bad. Almost an interception on the left at the end of the second quarter to mm-hmm. Kamari, only to throw the pick to Petrie, which allowed them to go score before the end of the half.
Yeah, pretty good
half.
Return, didn't he?
Yeah, pretty good return, and then they ultimately score at the end of the half with a Tank Dell. Beautiful play. Mm-hmm. Right, everybody was eating. John Mechie looked pretty good in this one, and I was like, oh, okay, I remember. John Mechie looks good in instances. I'll mm-hmm. be interested to see if Kaylee can also help him out. But it was fun to see, and it was bittersweet to see Tank Dell get out here on a little post corner and just toe tap on the back line, because I was like, damn, you're not going to get that this year.
Yeah.
So I was very sick at that. There was a huge out and up on the outside for Stephon Diggs, and I was like, I feel like you didn't get a lot of that from Stephon Diggs.
Well, that wasn't his role. But, yeah, he led the team in receiving. There you go with the adjustment, you know, without Nico Collins. That wasn't his role. His role changed in this game.
Yeah. Oh, one more thing I wanted to mention, because mm-hmm. the run game did pop up in a big way from Joe Mixon, but it just continues to be so comedic to me. The difference between when the run game is effective and when it's like,
it was Joe Mixon.
It is Joe Mixon, but even like when they try and actually execute well. Like all of the parts, when they execute well, they could get some really good runs out of this offense.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they didn't, it looked comedic. And in all these games, the last couple of games that I've watched against the Packers, against the Colts, you see it at various instances. And I'm just like, I'm just so excited for the possibility of, can you just give me standard? Can
adequate
you give me,
blocking.
Can you give me consistent?
Give me the mean. Give me just average, and we'll be good about it. I'm just looking at the box score now. Joe Mixon had 102 yards rushing.
Correct.
The team had 96.
That's right.
Four other dudes carried the ball for negative yardage. So it was Joe Mixon.
Yeah, man. It was an interesting game in there. I don't know that there was a lot that I go, man, this is wildly illuminating for me besides, mm-hmm. this Anthony Richardson thing. Like, and not that I was believing that it would work before. But, you know, you see the high watermark. But if you're just watching it, especially when you're watching it really quickly in that condensed format, I'm like, dog, I'm so sick of watching this dude play. I can only imagine what being a Colts fan is like.
Yeah.
Best of luck to them in that. Shout out to Petrie, but there was one of those instances where you saw the issue with him in coverage. Like, you're single high man. He's playing press coverage, and he gets... Anyways, love you, Petrie. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get into our lunchtime confessions presented by the Men's Clinic. We will do that next.